From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Korva Coleman, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Korva. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Korva. Thank you, everybody. We got a great show for you today. Louis Black, the angriest comedian in the world, will be with us. And we are going to poke him with a stick. It is a special high-tech Olympics edition of the show today. That means we'll be stopping the competition every 5 minutes to give you heartwarming stories about our contestants' triumphs over adversity. So if you've got somebody back at home, maybe a little stepbrother named Timmy with a serious but cheerful disease, give us a call. Number's 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Sherry from Kennebunk, Maine.
Kennebunk, Maine?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Would that be close to Kennebunk Port, Maine?
It is.
And so do you see the bushes going by on their speedboats?
No, but we hear the helicopters going overhead when he lands at the airport that's a few miles from our house.
Oh, really? Are they good neighbors, the Bush clan?
I prefer not to answer that question. All right.
On advice of counsel, no doubt. All right, then. Well, Sherry, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher and the author of the novel Schrodinger's Ball, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Also, say hello to a deputy editor of the Houston Chronicle and blogger therein, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri.
Hi, Sherry.
And finally, it's a TV personality and the proprietor of the website MoRocca180.com, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Mo.
Hi, Sherry.
Ready to play?
I am.
Okay, this week you are going to start us off with a game of Who's Korva This Time? This is, of course, the game where Korva will recreate three quotes in the week's news. Your job, identify or explain them. This week, all of your quotes are coming from the Olympics.
Okay.
The quadrennial event in which Americans start watching sports that they never care about, unless there's a chance that a victory in it can momentarily relieve our growing sense of national impotence. We're going to start you off with two quotes. That actually is the Olympic slogan. Do you know that?
It's not a good
relieving
slogan.
Relieving our national sense of impotence.
Yeah. I think the team could have picked something a little more upbeat.
We start you off with two quotes from Olympic swimmers. First, let's hear from a member of the Russian team.
He is just another person, but maybe from a different planet.
And in a contrary opinion, here's a member of the British swim squad.
He is not from another planet. He's from the future.
So what swimmer is either from another planet or the future or maybe a future planet or maybe he's a cyborg?
That's Michael Phelps.
It is Michael Phelps. There are more than 10,000 athletes competing at the Beijing Olympics. It's not just Michael Phelps and a handful of half-naked extras. Halfway through the games, Phelps is already the most decorated Olympian ever, with more lifetime gold medals than anybody else. He is on track to break Mark Spitz's record of most golds at a single Olympics. Weirdly, the one event he looked like he was going to lose, a relay race, was won by a superhuman effort by his teammate. I don't remember his name. Who cares? Because look, there's Phelps waving his arms about in jubilant celebration. Experts say that Phelps has a number of advantages over his competition, including a long torso, short legs, really big feet. Seriously, that's part of his arsenal. And the fact that the devil has agreed not to come and take his soul until after the closing ceremony.
I'm not sure that he's actually human. They keep talking about his wingspan.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, for getting through water, hollow bones would be very helpful.
It's true.
That's true, yes.
Kind of large
actually,
nose.
Here's the thing. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. People
Beijing
are like, oh, yeah,
dirty.
Michael Phelps. And then the story came out about how much the guy eats.
He eats a lot. Yes.
Oh, 12,000 calories a day.
And all of a sudden, everybody's like, I want to be like Mike. Yeah. Actually, people are saying, I already am like Mike.
Right. No problem. We don't have an obesity crisis. We have a swimming crisis in America.
We're not swimming enough.
It's exactly. A failure to swim.
Yeah, do 10 laps and get a blooming onion. That's the answer.
All right, Sherry, here is your next Olympic quote.
Okay.
But most of the audience thought it was filmed live, so that was mission accomplished.
That was Gao Xiaolong, a Chinese computer genius who was responsible for making sure that a particular event looked even better on TV than it did to the people actually watching it. What event?
I have no idea.
Well, it was quite the spectacle. It was, in fact, the biggest spectacle of...
Oh, the opening ceremony?
The opening ceremonies, yes. Many people watched this on TV, and if you did, you remember that great moment when exploding fireworks took the shape of giant footprints striding across the sky from Tiananmen to the stadium? Turns out they weren't actually there. They were a computerized, broadcast-only special effect that took a year to create. As you heard, the designer thought the CGI footprints up there were a smashing success. It was much better than their first idea, which was to have Jar Jar Binks light the Olympic torch.
Oh, the poor British. I feel so badly for the people in London watching, going, oh my God, how are we going to top this in 2012?
Yeah. Yeah.
They should definitely have their opening ceremonies manufactured in China.
Now, the fireworks, of course, were not the only thing that had been faked at these Olympics. It's also true that the little girl who sang the official Olympic anthem in the ceremonies was, in fact, lip-syncing because the real singer was determined by Chinese authorities to be insufficiently cute. So they swapped her out for a better model. And then, of course, came the most shocking revelation. It turns out that Chinese national hero basketball player Yao Ming is actually two guys, one standing in the other's shoulders, wearing a Yao Ming suit.
Yeah. Why in 100 years of modern Olympics, 100 years plus of modern Olympics, has nobody made up a country in that parade of nations?
Just to see who noticed?
Every time I see that, you know, there's always one country that I haven't heard of, and I'm like, that would be one of the funniest things that you could ever possibly do, is make up a country and a flag and put like 9 Olympians
totally.
In there and just have them be there in the parade. And they haven't done them yet.
Well, we could do it ourselves. We could be wait a stand.
Wait a stand. Sure.
What would our sports be?
Oh, jeez. Bruising.
Yes. The 50-meter bruise.
Yes.
I won the Charlie horse.
Sherry, here's your last Olympic quote. It's from women's beach volleyball champion, Misty May Trainer.
Mr. President, want to?
So... Misty May was inviting President Bush to do what?
Gosh, I hope it's play volleyball.
Not quite, actually. This is a very typical gesture among athletes. You see it a lot in football, baseball, and yes, beach volleyball.
High five?
More of a low gesture. Of a high five, but lower.
Slap her on the butt?
Yes, yes! Slap her on the butt.
Oh, no. Oh, heavens.
It is a tradition among female beach volleyball players, or so I have deduced from my casual watching of hundreds of hours of competition, that they slap each other's behinds.
No, wait a minute. That's the Americans. The Europeans kiss both cheeks.
Exactly. Ah. Ah. Terrible.
Oh.
Anyway, they do this. They slap each other's behinds as they go into combat. So Misty May Trainer offered her bikinied behind to the leader of the free world and invited him to work his will on her axis of evil. And the president, perhaps realizing what kind of photo that would make, or perhaps remembering the uproar that followed when he did it to Angela Merkel at the 2006 G8 summit, well, he declined. Instead, he placed his hand awkwardly on her lower back. It's still a nifty picture, though. You can see it on the internet. Korva, how did Sherry do in our quiz?
Well, Sherry got all three questions right, Peter, so she's going to win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on her answering machine.
Well done, Sherry. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Kiri, this week the National Archives released thousands of pages of previously classified documents from the World War II era. They confirmed the longstanding allegation that who acted as a spy for the U.S. during the big one?
Oh, I know the answer to this. This is so great.
Julia Child.
Yes, you're right. The famous television chef-to-be applied to the OSS, the forerunner to the CIA, at the age of 28 in 1941. She said she was looking for work because she didn't get along with her boss at her last job. She spent the war years working on a shark repellent, and then she was sent to Sri Lanka, where we presume she was involved with all kinds of espionage, probably involving colanders. She didn't start her cooking career till after the war, but since she married another OSS agent, we assume they kept dabbling in it. For example, there was the 1974 episode of her TV show in which she prepared a recipe called roast duck with lemon butter and 16 medium-range missiles now being installed in eastern Hungary.
He's got a gun!
We might have buried the lead there a little bit. Shark repellent?
Yes. This is actually true. They had this problem, the OSS did. Sharks were setting off mines in mined oceans. So they needed to find a shark repellent to keep the sharks away from the mines. They didn't blow up the mines, and the ships could blow up the mines.
I love repellent glazed mines.
Now I'm going to set that aside for just a minute and take out this mine that I finished earlier.
For the younger people in the audience, she was a woman who used to cook on TV with a funny voice. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Stephanie from Saraland, Alabama.
Saraland, Alabama. Where's that?
That is just north of Mobile.
Mobile, Alabama. So you're down there near the ocean. How are things these days?
It's wonderful down here. It's very nice.
Isn't it getting on toward hurricane season?
Well, we've been in hurricane season for a while, I think, and nothing much has happened so far.
Well, welcome to the show, Stephanie. Now, you're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Corva, what is Stephanie's topic?
Well, there's no topic this week, Peter. We really couldn't afford it.
Wow. These really are tough economic times. Everybody's having to cut back. Well, this week we read about a novel approach to saving money, beating the recession. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about innovative ways to pinch those pennies. Choose that real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes, I am.
All right. First, let's hear from Kiri O'Connor.
The TSA agents working the carry-on X-ray machines at Phoenix's Sky Harbor Airport weren't alarmed by Jennifer Dietzel's big green and pink tote bag or by her husband Kevin's camo duffel bag. Not alarmed at all. In fact, the tote bag had already gone through the machine when one of the agents saw the duffel bag move by itself. And then it started singing the alphabet song. When they opened it, they found hidden among the towels and undies little Madison Dietzel, age 2. And in the tote, her twin sister Avery, sound asleep. Though they were charged with misdemeanors, the Dietzels were unapologetic. Do you know how much it costs to buy tickets for 2 kids to Seattle? $950. Of course we tried to smuggle them on the plane, said Jennifer. It's not like we were going to put them in the overhead bin. Kevin Dietzel was rueful. Madison never takes her nap, he said.
Parents trying to save money by taking their kids on as carry-on luggage. In Phoenix, your next story of trimming the budget comes from Mo Rocca.
With feed prices skyrocketing, the average-sized American cow, weighing in at 1,300 pounds, is utterly unaffordable. Introducing the mini cow, less than half the weight and only 3 feet tall. The cuddly cattle cause less damage to land, provide proportionately more beef, and they're adorable, like pets that you eat. Interestingly, when cattle first arrived in the U.S., they were much trimmer. Mysteriously, the American bovine diet bloated them to their current size. So mini cows aren't so novel. Next up, micro mini cows, small enough to compete on the Chinese women's gymnastics team.
Mini cows, miniature versions of the normal things, easier and cheaper to keep. Lastly, let's hear from Adam Felber.
It's often said that children are the engines of the future, but at Seymour Elementary School in Indiana, this is now literally true. The school is now 100% kid-powered, thanks to a grant from Westinghouse and 776 high-tech desks outfitted with foot pedals that take care of all of the school's power needs. It kills two birds with one stone, says Principal Lucas Eshelman. The bird of runaway power bills? Dead. The bird of childhood obesity? Dying. Kids are encouraged to pedal away during idle non-writing minutes, and cheery posters festoon the rooms with slogans like, "Say what?" and "We're the generating generation." There may even be a third dead bird here, self-esteem issues. I'm not so great at spelling, says 9-year-old Troy Miller, but last month I generated 700 more kilowatts than anyone in the class.
All right. Here are your choices. From Kiri O'Connor, parents trying to smuggle their children onto the plane so they don't have to buy them tickets. From Mo Rocca, the stories of how ranchers are now raising tiny little cows because they're cheaper, mini cattle. And from Adam Felber, an elementary school which saves money and energy by putting the kids to work with pedals under their desk. Which of these is the real story of a cost-cutting measure in the week's news?
Well, I just flew with my kids, so I think the first story should be true, but I don't think it is. So I think that the true one is the mini cows.
Mini cows, tiny little cattle?
I hope so.
All right. Your choice, then, is Mo's story. Well, we spoke to an expert on this topic.
We raise miniature cows rather than large animals because they are significantly more feed efficient, and as such, they produce great milk for the little milk bottles that the kids have at school.
That's how you can tell if your milk comes from mini cows, if it's in small bottles. Those little guys, those are the mini cow milk. Big bottles come from the big cows.
I still don't believe that story.
That was Richard Gradwall, who says he's the director of the International Mini Cattle Breeders Society, explaining why these mini cows are more economical than regular-sized cows. Whether he was lying or not, you got it right. Congratulations. You have earned a point for Mo and won our prize. Carol Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Well done.
Thank you.
Stephanie, thank you so much for playing with us. Bye-bye. And now the game where we ask opinionated people about things about which we assume they have no opinion because they've never thought about them. We're very excited by this week's guest and a little frightened by him. He is perhaps the angriest comedian in the world. He's a regular on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, is the author of the new book, Me of Little Faith. He's putting out a new CD called Anticipation. He is also the host of the Comedy Central show, Root of All Evil. Louis Black, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. How are you?
It gets better every day, doesn't it?
Doesn't it really?
Really, I woke up this morning and things really just turned around finally, and I'm glad to see we're all back on track.
That's great. So all the things that have been driving you crazy for pretty much your entire life, they're all over now. They're done.
Oh, it's done. I'm so pleased.
Yes. So how are you
going to... Bad timing.
How are you going to do your act with nothing to get mad at?
Oh, don't worry.
All right.
There's always the weather.
What does, I mean, I exaggerate a bit, but it is true that your act is, shall we say, well, I don't even know if it's an act, that your presentation to your audience is about how much you are upset by something you're talking about, whatever it may be. What upsets you these days?
Oh, well, where do we begin? I feel like the Obama and McCain have been running... They've been running for office since I was 9 years old.
Yes, it's true.
I remember Eisenhower, and then these two guys started.
Right. I've seen you perform. Do you ever worry about your own health?
I have perfect blood pressure.
Perfect blood pressure. Doesn't get
everything else is rotting.
Are you really like that? I mean, we've seen your act, but if we meet you for dinner, say, have a dinner party with you, meet you in a social engagement, are you calm, mellow, or are you standing in the corner ranting?
Ask Adam. Adam? And Mo, they know me.
Oh, it's nothing but sunshine in person.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Sunshine and kisses, yeah.
Constantly hugs. Giving little gifts and hugs. Yeah.
lots of thank you notes.
Oh,
handwritten
God,
thank
with
you
the thank you notes. I've got a drawer full.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But my calligraphy is impeccable.
I was like
so
an old
precise.
Japanese man. Yeah. Exactly. It's amazing.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you're not like a lot of stand-ups who, like, you know, hit the clubs when they're 18 and you're out there. You came to it relatively late in life after another career, right?
Yeah, well, if you could call a career in playwriting a career.
Yes.
I wrote plays, which is, if you've got, I've said this on numerous occasions, but if you got a kid who wants to be a playwright, just shoot him.
Ooh, you should have written 12 Angry Men.
How did you then make the transition from starving playwright to a successful stand-up?
Well, I was writing and then and doing some acting and then but always on the side I was doing stand-up kind of because it fascinated me, and I just kind of did it really just on a lark, and then I kind of got people started going, you know, people started asking me to appear at clubs, and then then that became the road. Because apparently they paid you.
Yeah, they do that. So you've been doing this for a while. Do you ever feel trapped by your persona? Do you ever like want to say, yeah, but I'm not just angry. I want to be the romantic lead in my next project.
I don't think I can compare myself to Lassie and Rin Tin Tin. And I don't think that either of them felt trapped.
Really?
Cujo, on the other hand.
Yeah. A sweet, gentle soul with a flair for comedy, and nobody knew
no,
it.
No, I understand. Lassa used to constantly complain back in her trailer. She'd say, you know what? I just want to bite the kid. Just once. Just once. I want to show that side of me. I'm a carnivore. I want to bite him. Are you watching the Olympics?
Yeah, on occasion.
On occasion. Because the Olympics are perhaps the most uncynical event there is. I mean, there's not a single moment of irony or cynicism or even skepticism in the Olympics.
Nothing at all.
Right.
So, and especially the ads.
Right. They're all like soaring eagles and uplifting music and moms.
But you know that thing that the most astonishing thing was to watch that opening, which is like seriously one of the most psychotic things I've ever watched. I mean, I was going, not since LSD has anyone really reflected what I used to see. But that only our country would show this. And then in the middle of something, there'd be a fireworks display that was beyond description, and then it would just cut to a commercial.
Right.
I mean, what is the... And then come back, and they'd be in the middle of, like, doing some giant pentagram with 12 million people and a half a dozen excuses.
Well, Lewis Black, we are delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here this time to play a game that we're calling...
You're the most polite, well-behaved, sensible, calm person who ever rocked a sweater set and matching pearls.
For 30 years, Judith Martin has been writing the Miss Manners column, trying to bring civility and grace to a world devoted to boorishness. She has utterly failed, of course, but we decided to commemorate her anniversary by asking you, Lewis Black, who knows no bounds, 3 questions about the woman who knows just how to behave. Answer 2 questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice, on their home voicemail answering machine, whatever they got. Corva, who is Lewis Black playing for?
Kurt Sigman of Tempe, Arizona.
So you ready to do this?
Yeah, Kurt better just hang it up now.
Yeah, pretty much. I think Kurt just turned off his radio, so there's really nothing. Don't worry about him. All right, first question. Miss Manners is, of course, beloved by everyone except for a certain small coterie of people with a particular axe to grind. Who are these people, and what is their problem with Miss Manners? Are they A, Star Wars fans who are still furious with her for once dissing the movie The Empire Strikes Back? B, barbecue enthusiasts who have never forgiven her for referring to their cuisine as, quote, savage charred meat rituals? Or C, the residents of Dallas, Texas, for her comment that residents of that city, quote, have the manners of the cattle on which they grew rich, unquote?
I'd say B.
You're going to go for B, barbecue enthusiasts.
Yes.
No, actually, it's Star Wars fans.
Wow.
Don't tick them off.
Who even knew they had feelings?
Before she was an advice columnist, Judith Martin was a movie reviewer for the Washington Post, and she did not care for The Empire Strikes Back, calling it, quote, a good junk movie. And to this day, people dressed as Boba Fett threaten her on the streets.
Well, they act out threatening her with action figures.
Exactly. They sit there in their bedrooms going, oh, no. Yes, I am Boba Fett, Miss Manners, and I have come to... Oh, no.
You have to find me one last time, Miss Manners.
All over YouTube. I love it.
All right, you still got two chances here. You can do this. Next question. Miss Manners has been very influential and quite beloved over the years. Which of these was a way in which someone has paid tribute to her greatness? A, the Ole Miss Miss Manners House, a residence at the University of Mississippi, in which her rules for behavior are rigorously enforced. B, classical composer Dominic Argento once sent a selection of her columns to music. Or C, the small town of Virginia, where she grew up, has erected a statue of her gently wagging her finger at the viewer.
Well, since that last one was such a psychotic one, I'd have to say B.
And classical composer Dominic Argento, is that your choice?
Yeah.
You're right.
Yep.
He did compose a song cycle. It was commissioned from him by Miss Manners' husband, who agreed to pay the exorbitant price the composer demanded in the hopes that he would go away. But he paid it, and he did it. It sets some of her columns on the topic of music to music. All right.
Well, that's the CD I got to go grab in the morning.
There you go. All right. Comes down to this, your last question. Get this right, you win it all. Miss Manners is not to be messed with, as was discovered once by somebody who she slapped down with a lawsuit. Who was it? A, porn star Missy Manners, star of Behind the Green Door, the sequel, who was forced to change her name. B, a honky-tonk-themed restaurant in Georgia which advertised itself with the slogan, Miss Manners comes here to let her hair down and eat with a spork. Or C, a performer at Midwestern minor league baseball games who called herself Mistress Manners and walked around slapping fans' wrists with a rubber ruler.
Wow. Wow. Any of those.
Can it be all three?
No, yes. It can't be.
If she sued any of those people, she really needed to take a time out. Well, I'll go with porn star.
You're going with the porn star, Missy Manners?
Yes.
You're right. Missy Manners was the star of what some people believe to be the worst porn movie ever made, which is saying something.
What?
Behind the Green Door, the sequel. And after Miss Manners sued her, she had to change her name to plain Missy. Oddly enough, before Missy Manners went into that line of work, she worked as an aide to Senator Orrin Hatch.
Really? Is that true?
True fact.
Mm.
Wow.
I hope that Missy Manners remembered to tip the pizza delivery guy. It's only polite.
Don't you think? Corva, how did Lewis Black do in our quiz?
Well, he got two correct, so Carl Castle will be recording the message for Kurt Sigmund of Tempe, Arizona.
Well done. Does that soothe your indignation for a moment?
Well, you know, I'm all about giving.
Yeah, we've heard. So you've given again. Lewis Black is a Grammy Award-winning stand-up comedian. He hosts The Root of All Evil on Comedy Central. His latest comedy CD is Anticipation. His new book is called Me of Little Faith. Lewis Black, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Lewis.
Right now, panel, though, some more questions for you from the week's news. And we're going to start with another edition of...
Wait, Vets the Veepstakes.
Right now, as a public service, we are helping to keep track of the various vice presidential candidates, those reputed to be on the shortlists. We help by pointing out the flaws in these various candidates. So, Mo.
I can't imagine any flaws that might have emerged in the last week in some of the vice presidential.
So, Mo, Governor Tim Kaine of Virginia, supposed to be in Obama's shortlist. Some pundits say he could never be a successful candidate on the national stage because of his what?
Does he have a criminal record? You have to give me a clue.
Well, it's called the Burt problem.
Oh, he lives on Sesame Street. He lives in a trash can. He lives with another Muppet.
Or some people call it the Frida Kahlo problem.
Oh, he has a unibrow.
He has eyebrow problems.
Eyebrows are the problem.
Back in January, Kaine delivered the Democratic response to the State of the Union address, and instantly, the chattering classes were all asking the same question. What is up with that man's eyebrows? They seem kind of drawn on, except for the one that keeps trying to climb over his scalp and escape down his back. Well, he hasn't asked for it, but we are going to give him some help, and we are going to the best. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you all to rise, please, as we welcome to the show the woman known internationally as the eyebrow groomer to the stars, Aliza Petrescu. Ms. Petrescu, welcome to
White Wait. That's correct. Thank you.
Welcome
Thank you
to
for having me on.
Great to have you. Now we know that you shape the eyebrows of some of the biggest Hollywood stars, Madonna, Vanessa Redgrave, Kim Cattrall, Natasha. You do them all, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
And men alike, too.
No. Now, with your advanced expertise in eyebrows, you have looked at Mr. Kaine's eyebrows. Can you describe them for our listeners?
Yes, I absolutely can. His eyebrows are definitely too feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Arch is too high. So what I will do with him, I'll just brush and trim.
Yeah.
Then I will remove the excess hair between the eyebrows, so he doesn't have much.
Yeah.
But his eyebrows are definitely too manicured, and whoever did make him look like almost like a woman.
While you're here, with your expert opinion, what do you think of the presidential candidates' eyebrows, Mr. McCain and Mr. Obama?
To be honest with you, perfect eyebrow. Mr. Obama have perfect eyebrow.
Perfect
Mr. McCain needs a big help. First of all, he needs to color his eyebrows. You cannot have half white and half brown eyebrows.
So wait a minute. So you, this is a nonpartisan opinion. You're just an eyebrow expert. That's your only
opinion.
Interest. All right, expert opinion on eyebrows. So you think that McCain should dye his eyebrows?
He should tint the white hair on his eyebrow because he will look much younger.
And so.
Yeah.
But
Mr. Obama have perfect eyebrow. If they can switch, they will look much better.
Aliza Petrescu is perhaps the nation's foremost expert in the grooming of eyebrows. Thank you so much for being with us, Ms. Petrescu. What a pleasure.
Good luck.
Mo, a 90-year-old British woman's lifelong wish was fulfilled by a Make-A-Wish charity in her home country of Cornwall, England, when she was finally given what?
They gave her a teddy bear. Gave her something. It's something cuddly.
No, it's not quite. Well, it's sort of cuddly.
They gave her a jaguar.
90-year-old woman. It's all she ever wanted, and she finally got it.
A pacemaker.
No.
They gave her a...
A
new hip. What did she want? Teeth. It's something...
Well, it's kind of hard to describe. You just have to look in your heart, because you know that the answer is... Does anybody know?
Oh, in your heart. You have to look in your heart.
It's a metaphor, Mo.
Okay.
A metaphor.
Romance.
Sort of.
A Valentine.
Does anybody know the answer? Because
no.
I'm afraid it's really hard to hint. No, well, she basically got what she had wanted her whole life. She was served fish and chips by a man dressed only in a thong and a see-through apron.
Isn't that what everybody wants?
Like, yeah. I said, Mo, look
you
in your heart.
Look in our heart.
You would have found a man standing there wearing a thong, a see-through apron, and holding a plate of fish and chips.
Arthur Treacher in an apron.
Cornwall Care, that's the name of the charities, they said that the typical wish is a day out for a pint and a pasty, the famous meat pie of
mm-hmm.
Cornwall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they had no problem with the elderly woman's life-affirming wish. A spokesman explained, quote, "Well, it may have been a bit risque. The wish was carried out with utmost respect. A staff member volunteered to strip down to be the waiter, and the meal was a rousing success," said the unidentified nonagenarian, quote, "I thoroughly enjoyed my fish and chips served by that half-naked man." Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where Corva recreates some more moments from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Tom Taylor from Greenville, South Carolina.
And what do you do there?
I'm a school administrator. I'm the director of technology for District 5 Schools of Spartanburg County.
So has the summer been easier for you, or have you been trying to get everything booted up?
Oh, man, we've been trying to get everything booted up. We're opening new schools, and we put in over 1,000 new computers this summer, so it's been kind of crazy.
Wow. You know, I went to school. I didn't have any computers. I just had, we just made marks in the cave wall, and...
right.
Tom, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Corva this time? Corva Coleman will read three quotes from the week's news. If you correctly identify or explain two of them, Carl Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine.
Okay.
Ready to go?
I am.
We're going to start you off with something. This is the way one of the candidates was described while he was on the campaign trail earlier this year.
My love lips.
So who, as it turns out, was known to at least one intimate as Love Lips?
Would that be John Edwards?
Yes, it would be. So, last Friday, John Edwards snuck onto Nightline and ABC News to tell the three people who were not watching the Olympics that the National Enquirer was, what do you know, right. Edwards admitted that he had had an affair with his campaign staffer, Riel Hunter. Of the many denials he had made over the past year when asked about the affair, Edwards said he had been 99% truthful, except for that little sliver of it where he denied cheating on his wife and possibly fathering a child out of wedlock. But he did say that he was not the father of Miss Hunter's baby, even though this week one of Riel Hunter's friends said the baby looked, quote, like John Edwards in a onesie. Here is your next quote.
Okay.
This circular firing squad that is occurring is unattractive, unprofessional, unconscionable, and unacceptable. Stop it!
That was from a series of internal emails from a campaign operation published this week in the Atlantic Monthly. So whose campaign's favorite target was, as it turns out, itself?
McCain?
No, although apparently that's a problem, but their emails have not yet leaked.
Because they don't have email.
I'm assuming this would be a presidential campaign, so yes. At least one other, which would be Obama.
No, it's not Obama. This is a campaign that ended, of course.
Campaign that ended. That would leave Clinton, perhaps?
Yes, it was Clinton's. Okay. Clinton's campaign. Historians will be puzzling for years over how Hillary Clinton once seemed to have a lock in the Democratic nomination, lost the race. And now we know part of the reason. Her campaign headquarters was a vicious, hate-filled snake pit in which an actual snake would have fainted dead away. The leaked emails reveal that Hillary would allow her senior aides to bicker among themselves until she exploded at them for getting everything wrong, presumably via a 3 a.m. phone call.
The emails, 3 a.m.
Of course. The emails also showed that chief strategist Mark Penn wanted the campaign to attack Barack Obama much harder than it did.
Wow.
By spreading the message that he was not, quote, fundamentally American, unquote. Fortunately for her reputation, if not her campaign, Senator Clinton did not take that advice. Instead, she listened to the angel on her shoulder. Little did she know that in May of this year, all angels switched their allegiance from God to Obama. All right, Tom, here's your last quote.
They say this cat Shaft is a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
Those immortal lyrics were penned by a man who tragically passed away this week. Who?
That would have to be the late, great R&B singer Isaac Hayes.
Yes, indeed, Isaac Hayes. Man who won an Oscar for the theme from Shaft and gave voice to Chef on South Park, died of a stroke on Sunday. I think he was 65. Hayes got his start as a songwriter with the legendary Stax record label in Memphis. He co-wrote songs like Soul Man, Hold On, I'm Coming, a lot of classics. But to this day, there are rumors that the lyrics to Shaft about that complicated man who was only understood by his woman were inspired by a run-in Hayes had in early 1971 with Carl Castle. Corva, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Well, Tom got three correct, Peter. So Tom's going to win Carl's voice on his answering machine.
Well done.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Who is the man that would risk his neck for his brother, man? Can you dig it?
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points. Korva, can you give us the scores?
I can. Mo has 3, Kiri has 3, Adam has 2. Mo and Kiri are tied for the lead.
Adam, you're in third place, so you're up first. The clock will start when I begin. Your first question, fill in the blank. On her way to crisis talks, Condoleezza Rice said that Russia must end its military activity in blank.
Georgia.
Right. On Monday, Barack Obama said that he will inform his supporters of his vice presidential choice via blank.
Email.
Right, or text message, whichever you prefer. The Bush administration is hoping to overhaul the Blank Act so federal agencies can determine for themselves whether their activities put listed animals at
endangered risk. Species.
Right. On Wednesday, it was announced that Blank will be the keynote speaker at the Democratic convention.
Warner.
Right, Mark Warner, former governor. After numerous customer complaints, a shop in Britain was forced to take a blank out of its window.
A pregnant mannequin.
Right. Two trackers in a remote part of Georgia claim that they have recovered the remains of the legendary Blank.
Sasquatch.
Yes, or Bigfoot. Hospitals in Austria and Sweden have banned blanks because they say they pose a major threat to the well-being of their patients.
Nintendo Games Boys.
No. Crocs shoes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's medical fact.
There's nothing that inspires confidence in your healthcare worker like seeing them clomping down the hallway in a pair of gigantic hot pink plastic clown shoes. Also known as Crocs. Well, now, hospitals in Austria and Sweden are banning the colorful, rubbery footwear. They say the distinctive shoes can generate massive amounts of static electricity, which could shock patients, wipe out computer memories, zap life-saving equipment. And because it's really hard to take a guy seriously who's telling you you have 6 months to live when he looks like a total dweeb. Korva, how did Adam do on our quiz?
Well, Adam had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. Adam has 14 points and has taken the lead.
How did you know about the pregnant mannequin?
That's good. We flipped a coin. Kiri has elected to go second. Here you go, Kiri. Fill in the blank. China's women's gymnastics team won the Olympic gold medal in spite of allegations that the gymnasts are blank.
Younger than 16.
Right. Before Pakistan's parliament can begin impeachment proceedings against him, blank is expected to resign.
Pervez Musharraf?
Right. According to a Labor Department report, consumer prices and high energy prices in July caused blank rates to rise to the highest level since 1991.
Inflation.
Right. A public memorial service was held Saturday in Chicago for actor and comedian blank, who died last weekend at 50.
Bernie Mac.
Right. Several employees were fired from their jobs at an Ohio Burger King after a video surfaced showing an employee blanking.
I love this.
Washing himself in the little sink thing.
Yes, taking a bubble bath. Mark David Chapman, the man who murdered blank, was denied parole this week for the 5th time.
John Lennon.
Right. Disability rights groups protested the opening of Tropic Thunder, the new movie from actor and director blank.
Ben Stiller.
Right. And yet another city planning disaster for Warsaw, Poland. Engineers built a railway tunnel that is blank.
Doesn't go anywhere.
No, that is too small for trains to fit through.
Oh, God.
It's been a bad year for the civil engineers of Warsaw. First, they came up with plans for a motorway, 2 sections of it. If they had built it the way it was designed, they would not have met. Then a tunnel built to divert truck traffic turned out to be sadly too low for the trucks. And now a train tunnel that's too small for trains. It wasn't, but it turns out that if you put the tracks in it, the trains can't fit. They didn't think of that.
There was also that tragic skyscraper that they started building at the top floor.
Yeah. Embarrassed Polish officials said they should have known better than to hire consultants from the Lionel Corporation. Korva, how did Kiri do in our quiz?
Well, she had 7 right for 14 more points, so Kiri now has 17 points.
Whoa!
And the lead.
This is a horrible. This is a horrible situation because that was all the news that I know.
There's nothing left. You have a finite amount. I understand.
I don't know anything else.
Here's the question, Korva. How many then does Mo need to win?
Well, he needs 7 right to tie. He needs 8 to win.
You can do it, Mo. Here we go, Mo. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is considering legislation that would permit blanking as part of the new energy bill.
offshore drilling?
Right. Police are investigating why a recently fired Target employee shot the chairman of the Blank headquarters in Arkansas.
Democratic. Chairman of the Democratic Party.
Right, exactly. Weekly Standard editor Bill Kristol said that sources told him that former Republican Secretary of State Colin Powell will endorse Blank for president.
Barack Obama.
Right. A resident of Portland, Oregon, has tried to solve that city's woes by blanking.
He developed a cheer.
No. He stuck giant acupuncture needles into the ground. According to a report from the Census Bureau, blank people will no longer make up a majority of Americans by 2042.
White.
Right. After an enthusiastic supporter shook her hand at a fundraiser, Blank ended up with a minor wrist sprain.
Cindy McCain.
Right. For the second time in as many weeks, a man in Ohio was caught blanking in a supermarket.
Doing something with the cart.
He was eating. No, he was stuffing T-bone steaks into his pants. There's an epidemic. The first man from Winton Place, Ohio, only stuffed 3 packages of T-bones into his pants before he was caught. But Christopher Penn of Springfield Township, clearly trying to set a record, managed to get 8 T-bones into his trousers. Security caught him, not because, you know, they found him stuffing him in, but because it's really hard to casually stroll out of a supermarket with 8 T-bone steaks in your pants. Corva, did Mo do well enough to win?
Well, Mo needed 8 correct answers to win. He got 5. For an additional 10 points.
I like
for
bronze.
For a total of 13. So, with 17 points, Kyrie O'Connor is this week's winner.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that he's completed his domination of the Olympics, what will Michael Phelps do next? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Music Performance Fund, striving to enrich lives by sponsoring thousands of public concerts in the United States. Schedules at musicpf.org. And the Wallace Foundation, whose knowledge center is where education leaders can go to learn about improving teaching and learning. Downloads at wallacefoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Emily Ecton and Joanna Feldman. Our senior producer at Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. By the way, this week we say farewell to fabulous Joanna Feldman. We thank her so much for all the great work she did, and we hope we haven't harmed her standards too much. Now, panel, what will Michael Phelps do next? Adam Felber.
He will return to his old job as mayor of Atlantis.
He is a benevolent ruler. Kyrie O'Connor.
He's going to invade a sovereign country all by himself.
And Mo Rocca.
Like the superhero Voltron, he'll split into 6 little robots and compete in 2012 as the Chinese women's gymnastics team.
And if Michael Phelps does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Corva Coleman. Thanks also to Adam Felber, Mo Rocca, and Kyrie O'Connor. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.